Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon. I'm your host and cruise director, Madam Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, Jennifer Baudette Perry, and JP to musicians. And I am real excited about tonight's show. Got such a cool guest I've been wanting to have on for a very, very long time, a great writer. First of all, though, for new folks, I want to say that thank you for being here. If you see the little button there, if you're listening to this on Blog Talk Radio, if you would, please click the follow button and follow the show. We would certainly appreciate that. And it lets you know who else is coming on ahead of time. Also, tell your friends about it, too. Share the link. Share the love. Now, Madam Perry Salon began as a blog, and the salon idea was to be like the cultural literary salons of a few centuries past. And I like bringing interesting, talented, delightful people together, and I've been very fortunate to know so many wonderful folks. Tonight's guest came to me through the attention of the wonderful Joe Meinhardt in South Africa of Crystal Lake Publishing. Joe, I can't wait to meet you one day. So I think my guest is almost in here. He's not in here yet, but let me look. See, I think I hear him.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
EQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, Intruder Alert. EQ 3, Intruder Alert.
Oh, I don't think it's an intruder. I think it's my guest tonight, Mark Allen Gunnels. Mark, come on in, Madam Perry Salon.
Well, it's nice to be here. I didn't know that Sula was going to make such a fuss over me.
Well, you know, he's all I did was just send him a nice rainbow invitation, and he was happy to do it.
Well, I'm honored to be here. You got a nice comfy setup here with the round couch and the pillows and everything. Very happy to be here.
You like this? Thank you. Yes.
Very comfy.
As we always say, Robert Leland Taylor, the author who lives in Zanesville, Ohio, said this reminded him of Jeannie's bottle. Of course, he also said it smelled like cleaning products, but I don't think so.
Oh. Well, I always wanted to live in Jeannie's.
All right, perfect. Well, welcome so much to Madam Perry Salon. And I got to tell you, when I read your book, when I first got an email from you, I was just delighted. I think in your publisher's page, I said just my first few exchanges and email, I was just enchanted with you. And then when I started reading Flowers in a Dumpster, as I call it, a whip-smart collection of short stories. And it's a fantastic work. And I'm glad to have you here. Thank you. So tell me about you. Now, you live in Crystal Lake Publishing lives in the South Africa. I think around Joburg. But you don't live there, do you?
No, I actually live in South Carolina here in the States. I'm a Southern boy, so.
All right.
I had to find a publisher way in South Africa, but
how exotic.
It's surprising to me, but Crystal Lake is really just they're really making a great reputation for themselves really quickly, so I was really happy to get in with them.
Crystal Lake is quite a powerhouse, a publishing powerhouse, and there's not a loser, not a clunker among the whole catalog or a list of authors. It's just... I'm just thrilled with all the people I've met through Joe. The first one I came to meet was, Emma Audsley and Jasper Bark.
Yeah, yeah. I just finished reading something by Jasper Bark, really great. So they are publishing some really great authors. That's why I said I'm really kind of honored that they let me join their little family there.
Well, will you tell me how that happened? I mean, how did you get your other collection placed with Crystal Lake?
Well, last year they opened up for a brief window for unsolicited submissions.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little daunting to me because in every other book I had published, I had just sent in a manuscript to a publisher that was open for submissions. But Crystal Lake didn't want to start that way. You had to send them a pitch. So basically you had to sell yourself to them and convince them why they should invest the time to read your manuscript. And as a writer, I feel pretty confident telling stories and letting them speak for themselves. But I'm like, oh, now I have to like sell myself. And I was really kind of blocked on that. There was a whole pitch I had to send in where I would talk about, you know, what kind of work I did, kind of compare it to other writers, but then also what makes mine different and sets it apart, you know, promotional things I had done in the past. And I was so kind of blocked on that that I almost didn't submit. I really felt like I don't know if I can sell myself enough. Mm-hmm. I had my fiance Craig and a friend of mine, Harper Hull, really convinced me to, you know, you got to at least try. You'll never forgive yourself if you don't try.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I do, I do subscribe to that philosophy too. So, I mean, it was really the last minute, right before the deadline. I wrote a pitch.
No.
Yeah, and I got it in right before they closed for submissions. And I didn't hear anything for a little bit. Then I heard that I had made it to the next round where they would actually read your work.
Mm-hmm.
And I had submitted, and my good friend Harper had submitted. And when I heard back from him that he didn't make it, I kind of thought, oh, because I have a lot of respect for his work. So I thought, well, if he didn't make it, then it's probably only a matter of time before I get my, you know, rejection letter too. But I was very happy. Joe was very enthusiastic about it. He said it was one of the only collections that they bought during that open submission period.
Oh,
and
really?
He just, yeah, I was very excited because short stories are a passion of mine anyway. And I was impressed by how enthusiastic they were because, you know, short story collections aren't as popular as the novel or the novella even.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they were very enthusiastic. They promoted it hard. We worked very hard to get it into great shape before we put it out there. And I'm very happy that Craig and Harper convinced me to send in that pitch.
So am I. So are a lot of people. And especially Crystal Lake Publishing, too, because they have just been very thrilled to promote this. So glad you did. It's like the story of the success that almost wasn't just because you had to be sort of nudged on in.
Yeah,
and
I'm very happy that I made that attempt to get that out there because it has been kind of a dream experience ever since I got accepted.
Oh, yeah. That's a very strong publishing house, and they're growing so quickly. Now, you also have two books with Sinister Grin. Will you tell me about them?
Yeah, Sinister Grin is a publisher that I sort of ended up with, oddly enough, because of Facebook. I was very late to the Facebook revolution. But the reason I joined was because I knew other writers who said, you know, yeah, you got to join Facebook because it's great for promoting your work. So that's primarily why I started. I don't know how much it may or may not have helped with selling, you know, getting new readers, but I have made a lot of contacts on there because I friend lots of writers, I friend lots of publishers, and I had just friended some of the people who run Sinister Grin. We got to know each other on Facebook. That convinced them to try some of my work, and then they asked me if I had anything I wanted to send them, and of course, because I am a short story lover, the first thing I said was, you know, would you be interested in looking at a collection? And they said yes, and I was also in the middle of writing a zombie novella, and they said they'd like to read that when I was done, so I send it in, and they took both of them.
Whoa, wow. That's great. That's great. Now, so you're, now what's the name of the zombie novella?
The zombie novella is called Fort, and it is set actually at my alma mater, the college I went to. I sell a lot of stories there. And it's about a group of students trapped in a dorm by the undead, planning sort of a desperate dash from the dorm to the dining hall to get some food so they don't all starve to death.
You know, I like the premise already. It's probably not supposed to be funny, but you can picture, you know, you can picture certain actors doing this, you know, sort of like the, like the Breakfast Club meets, you know, the zombie.
Yeah. I definitely inject some humor in there as well. So just because things are horrible and desperate doesn't mean there can't be a little bit of humor in there as well.
Well, really? Well, let me ask you this. So when did you start writing?
Well, I started probably the earliest stories I was writing. I was probably around 10. And they were just little one-page, like Twilight Zone knockoffs, basically. And I did that for a while, and then I tried my hand at what I was calling a, you know, a novel back then, but it was, you know, like 10 pages long. But what about a child millionaire who was kidnapped for ransom and had to escape his kidnappers? And I kind of modeled that kid after Ricky Schroeder of Silver Spoons. But, but you know, and I started taking writing seriously probably in junior high. That's when I really realized, like, this was my passion. This is what I wanted to do. This is what I loved. Back then, it was a lot of melodramatic teen angsty poetry. And in high school, I got it back into, like, short story writing. And I just took off from there. And I've really been writing. There was a brief period after college when the stress of adulthood really kicked in that I kind of fell away from writing, but luckily I got back to it. But I really started doing it seriously in junior high school.
Well, if I can, when you talk about some, you know, even with bad, with you know, scary stuff or suspense or horror, about putting some humor in, if I may, I'd like just to read something from the review of Flowers in the Dumpster by Matt Mogard's Horror Novel Reviews. I know you know this review well. Oh, but the review was written by Nathan Crazy Bear. And and like how this, it says, Flowers in a Dumpster compiles 17 of Gunnell's short stories, strong collection. He takes readers through the barren wastelands of post-apocalyptic America. He drags us along highways frequented by hitchhiking serial killers, lets us look over the shoulder of a horror writer on the cusp of greatness, and holds our feet to the wood as our own gods crucify us. Oh, yeah, that was a good story. I know what they're talking about. it says, some of his strongest storytelling comes in the form of bringing us characters that have been pushed to the breaking point. What happens to the sweet family of three when they've watched the entire world around them die? Well, what do we become when we can't reconcile ourselves spiritually with who we are sexually? Oh, yeah, 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 that's a good story, too. Folks, you got to get this book. What happens when our passions take hold and become us? Gunnell's believable characters are brutalized, and what makes for a consistently suspenseful read. But then I have to say here, he says, perhaps one of the best aspects is his unrelenting. Now, you've heard all about this, about characters pushed to the breaking point, hitchhiking serial killers, okay? All the horror, the barren wastelands. And then it says, but perhaps one of the best aspects is his unrelenting good humor. So it's like, okay, all right. While some pieces bathe in comedy and black humor, like Walking Talking Jesus or Possession, others he expertly interweaves the laughs in with the creepy, the dark, and the brutal, the Bonaventure and Transformations. His fondness for fun is a wonderful reminder of the complementary role that comedy plays in the horror genre. And that is great. Even while I'm reading that, I'm reliving all the stories. You know?
Yeah. Well,
you're right.
First of all, I'm very honored by that review. And, I mean, the book has reviewed very well. and I got some great blurbs for it, so I'm very happy. But I do think I like to put humor in there, and it's not even like a conscious thought necessarily, but I just think people are funny.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even always know they're funny. And sometimes that is the funniest when people, I mean, my mother, for instance, is hilarious, but she does not know it. She has no idea why.
Break it down.
Well, okay, so I'll give you a for example. When the first time my mother ever met my fiance, when we had just started dating, we had taken her out to eat. I mean, she had just met, he wasn't my fiance at the time, but she had just met him maybe 5 minutes before. We were just sitting there, and she just looked at him and said, "I don't know if Mark tells you, but I never met my daddy. He got blown up by a landmine in World War II." And, you know, there was like silence for a minute. And then, you know, Craig, very gracious, he just engages her in that conversation. But he asked me later, he's like, "What brought that up?" And I'm like, nothing. It's just what she decided to say as one of the first things she ever says to you. She just thought it was a good conversation starter, and she would not think it was funny, but that was her opening. But she does a lot of stuff like that where she's just talking. She has no filter. She has no sense of too much information. These people don't know me, and she doesn't understand that it's funny. But it's like, I understand why comedians do impressions of their mother a lot. And everybody I meet, I do an impression of my mother. My mother is famous and she doesn't know it. People love to ask me to do my Mama Gunnel stories, but she is hilarious, but she doesn't know it. And a lot of people don't know it. And I just think humor comes out in a lot of ways, even in horrible situations. So it almost feels natural to me when I'm writing just to weave that into it.
That is funny. And you know what, though? I do the same. I mean, I call myself an armchair sociologist. I did until I studied, got a degree in communications. Then I became an armchair ethnographer. I felt like I was ready for it, too, for a promotion. But, yeah, I think there are so many people who have, to me, there's so much entertainment all around me every day. Mm-hmm. People who don't, maybe, they're certainly not their intent to entertain me. But it is. But of course, your mother sounds far and above. But I do know, because things will come out of my mother's mouth to people, and it's just like, whoa, what? What did that have to do? It's not even a non sequitur. It's just like, it doesn't even mean, where did this come from? But to your mm-hmm. fiance, and like I said, he wasn't your fiance then. I don't know how long you've been dating him, but I can imagine. Did you warn him ahead of time?
Well, I told her she was interesting. I even didn't expect that to be one of the first things she said to him. But I told her she doesn't really have a filter. She will say anything. She loves to talk about death. I think that happens to a lot of people when they get older. So, you know, she's not excited, but if somebody even tangentially connected to her dies, like, you know, you're going to hear a lot about that. And, you know, she believes everything. Everything she hears, she just sort of believes it. Especially, you know, with politics and stuff. If she hears it on TV, she just thinks it's true, but she doesn't quite get it right. She told me one day when I was over there, just out of the blue, that Obama worships Lala. And I said, what? Where did somebody said on TV? And I'm like, well, first of all, if there was a god named Lala, I would probably worship him. He sounds like a lot of fun.
I thought that was a Teletubby. But okay, yeah.
But, you know, and she just, you know, she heard something on TV. She didn't quite understand what they were saying, but whatever it was, it had to be true because they said it on TV.
Of course.
You know, I actually did write I recently co-wrote a novel with an Australian author named Aaron Dries.
I was just about to ask you about him. Yes.
Yeah. And there is a character in the book that Aaron's never met my mother, but he's heard a lot of my mother's story. So we specifically based the character around some of my mother's personality quirks. And we kind of combined a little bit of my mother and my fiance Craig's mother, because she has her own, you know, hilarious bits. But so it was kind of fun, because, I mean, there are things that the character says that just are things that came right out of my mother's mouth. If you read them, you'll probably think nobody would ever really say that, but my mother did. And it is, it's just, it's nice to have it in there, especially for, you know, you can only take so much horror where you need some sort of break or release, and a laugh can do that and sort of recharge you to get ready to go back into the more dark elements of the story. And, you know, I do enjoy doing that. If something makes me laugh in a story, then, you know, people are going to get a kick out of that. And I do have some stories that are definitely more humorous than others. Some of the stories in the collection, The Possession is one that comes right to mind, but where I really kind of hit the humor kind of hard. But I think it works in a lot of horror stories.
Yeah, so you co-wrote the book with Aaron Dries, and how did the two of you meet?
Well, we had become friends on Facebook, but we had never really interacted much. We had friends in common sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But last year they had the World Horror Convention in Atlanta, Georgia, and I never been able to go to one of those because I can't really afford to, you know, travel to them. But, I mean, mm-hmm. this one was just a couple of hours' drive away. So this was my chance to finally go to the World Horror Convention. And he had flown over from Australia and was doing kind of an American tour. I knew he had visited some horror movie sites before ending up in Atlanta. So we met at the World Horror Convention. I went to a reading of his, which was excellent. And, you know, I had read one of his books before that, and it was wonderful. And so we, you know, hung out together and got to talking and, you know, really sort of hit it off and had a good rapport. And he said that he was wanting to collaborate, and he had, like, the germ of an idea that we discussed. And, I mean, next thing you knew, we were writing it. We thought it was going to be a novella when it started, but it grew into a full-fledged novel. And you know, he's a really cool guy, and he's super talented. So I was very honored to be able to work with him and sort of learn from him as we collaborated on the story.
Well, I think you met at the World Horror Convention in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And but I think you're very talented, but you're very modest, because I see you also have a blurb on your book from Clive Barker.
I do. Actually, Clive Barker has a blurb on the cover, and then there's a blurb from Ramsey Campbell on the back, so it's like British blurbs on both ends, and both of them were very, very surreal to me. That
Yeah.
And, you know, the Clive Barker blurb came from I had actually one of the stories in the collection called The Support Group. The way that story came to be was I wrote it for a contest that Clive Barker was judging. They provided one of his paintings, and then you had to write a story based on that painting. And he mm-hmm. picked a winner, first runner-up, second runner-up, and third runner-up. And my story, much to my surprise, placed as first runner-up in that competition.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
And it was, again, very surreal, but very thrilling. And he provided a blurb for me for that story. And then when I wanted to use it in the collection, I didn't talk to him directly, but I contacted his people and asked if we could use part of the blurb for the book. And they gave me permission, and that ended up on the cover. And then when Joe was doing the pre-promotion for the book, he mentioned to me that he had sent a copy to Ramsey Campbell, who he was working with on an anthology. Mm-hmm. And I said, Ramsey Campbell's not going to read my book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ramsey Campbell is like a master who's like on my shelf. Like, he's not going to read my book, but he did. And he gave me a very generous and lovely blurb, which got put on the back cover. And I mean, I am sort of modest in that I don't ever want to become a writer with a lot of ego, I want to always be sort of surprised and delighted, and I want it to be surreal when good things happen to me, because, you know, I write because I love it, and everything else is gravy. I want to do well. I want to keep publishing. I want to reach readers. But, you know, ultimately I do it because I love it, and as long as I'm loving it, I feel successful anyway.
And you are. So, but how did it feel, though? I mean, come on. How did it feel?
Well,
so, I mean, after all these years of reading and writing, and you know, still, you're such a young writer, but the fact that after all of these years of being such a fan of the genre and reading these people's works, and Ramsey, and, I mean, Clive, and then all of a sudden you've got this book that's published by the publisher that you, to whom you almost did not send the book, and now it's published, and now both of these people, you've got a blurb on the front and the back. You got to have a, or you, tell me there was a happy dance somewhere, or a scream, or something.
I mean, there was a lot of squealing and delight. I mean, would start with the Clive Barker thing. I mean, Clive Barker is sort of, is one of my idols. He's someone I respect as a storyteller. Also, since I am a, you know, I'm very passionate about the short story form, you know, he made his name with the short story and then moved to novels. And that really, you know, that's something I can respect, and it's not something that happens a lot. And also, I mean, as a gay man, you know, a gay man doing well in the horror genre was sort of something I looked up to. So to get that blurb from him, it was very, when I submitted the story, I didn't expect to place. I just thought it was really great. Like, Clive Barker's going to read something I wrote, because, you know, he was reading the stories and making the decision. So I'm like, he's going to see my name on a screen. I mean, and that to me was just delightful and surreal. So when I actually placed and I saw that he gave me that blurb, it was one of the highlights of my career. And then when Ramsey Campbell gave me the blurb, it was, again, I'm like, you know, this is somebody I've admired, you know, most of my life, at least since I've been, you know, seriously reading. So it's weird enough that they know who I am, but then that they've enjoyed something I've done. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel, in a weird way, I'm honored, but it also kind of makes me feel humble, you know, because, again, I don't really get into the ego thing, but I feel like, you know, appreciate that. And it also makes me want to, if, you know, a publisher approaches me and asks me if I will pre-read a book for a possible blurb, I'm going to say yes, because I want to pay that forward. You know, I'm not going to give a blurb for a book I don't enjoy, but I want to be able to do that if I do enjoy the book, because I know how much that means.
Yes. When, yeah, tell you what, I've got more questions to ask you, but first I got to give a shout out to some very, very cool people who are my sponsors tonight. And so, folks, I'm going to be back in just a few minutes with more questions from Mark Gunnels. And believe me, and am I pronouncing your name correctly?
That is correct. It is. It does not always get pronounced correctly, and I usually will just let it go, but you are pronouncing it correct.
Oh, good. Thank you. Mark Allen Gunnels. I'm going to be back with more of him and his horror and his laughs and the exciting things that are going on with him. But first, I want to tell you about something. As you know, people always say that this Madame Perry Salon looks like Jeannie's bottle. Okay, maybe it does. But, you know, hey, pull up a nice cushy pillow and sit down, and we'll talk about it. But, you know, I love classic TV. And my friend Steve Talamantes has a fantastic podcast on Podbean, and it's called TV Classics. But I'm going to let him tell you about it.
Go download and listen to the TV Classics podcast, available today at tvclassics.podbean.com and your favorite podcatcher. TV Classics is a podcast about the old classic TV shows of yesteryear. Go down memory lane with Steve Talamantes and Gabriel Galanos as they talk about the golden days of television. They are devoted to classic TV and behind-the-scenes fun facts you didn't know about. Join them today, tvclassics.podbean.com. Also, like them at facebook.com/tvclassicspodcast and follow on Twitter at tvclassics1. That's TV Classics, the number one, on Twitter. You can also contact them today at tvclassicspodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's the TV Classics Podcast, available on Podbean and your favorite podcatcher. Go listen, download, and subscribe today.
All right, folks, and I have checked it out, and it is a great podcast. And if you look below, if you're on the Blog Talk Radio page below, you'll see that I've got a link to TV Classics Podcast. You can check it out yourself. Yeah, Steve Calamontes and Gabriel Galanos, they do a very professional, fantastically entertaining podcast, TV Classics. Check that out. And you know what? I also have a lot of friends who are maybe travel aficionados, but they can't really afford to travel a lot yet. However, they're trying to work. Maybe it's an author, a musician, stay-at-home parent, and they would like to travel. They're interested in travel. They're also interested in making some money. Well, guess what? My friend Elvis Butcher, a company called King of World Travel. In fact, as you'll see below, I also have a link to his site. It's called kingofworldtravel.com. And check this out, because he has a great website. It's fantastic business. You can become a travel consultant. You can work from home. You can book travel for people. And you can even travel and get paid. But just check him out and learn why. He's also on Twitter at, and I'm going to spell this for you, on Twitter, it's KingWorldTravel. And I also have the connections to that, the links to there below. But yeah, kingofworldtravel.com is a fantastic place for either travel, get your travel assistance there, or also learn how to work from home as a travel consultant. And it's the best you could do. And so all my musician friends, I'm sure, are calling them up right now, and probably some authors too. Mark, what do you think?
I think it's entirely
authors?
Possible.
Yeah, because all the authors I know, you know, want to have some time to write, but don't want to have to leave home and come back, you know, from a day gig, and they can do some traveling. And then, hey, book their own travel tour. That way, when they're promoting their own book, they'll already know the places to go. So, kingofworldtravel.com. And, yeah, check it out down there. So, I was going to ask you, too, about some of your other work. Like, there's tell me about Halloween House of Horrors.
Halloween House of Horrors is a collection I did with Great Old Ones Publishing, and I was approached by Philip Perrin, who runs that publishing house. He was familiar with some of my other work and had interviewed me on a podcast he had done a while before. Mm-hmm. And I had this idea because I love Halloween. I'm a Halloween nut. I never outgrew the charms of Halloween. And I have this tradition where I think there's a lot of us who Halloween. And every October I have this tradition where for that month I only write Halloween short stories. I just take a break from whatever I'm writing, and sometimes it may be just one or two, sometimes it may be three or four, but I write Halloween stories in the month of October, so I have a lot of them. And a few years before, I had published a short collection called Dark Treats that had five Halloween stories in it, but I still had all these short stories set on Halloween. So I asked him, would you be interested in doing a Halloween collection? And, you know, we can release it, you know, in October. And he was all for it, so I just collected all these different Halloween stories. I had a slight wraparound story to sort of, you know, pull them together in a more cohesive sort of way, but it's a lot of, I think it's 19 Halloween stories of various tones. A couple of them aren't even horror stories, just set on Halloween, but I really, because also in October I always read Halloween themed books, so I'm very excited that I have a couple of Halloween themed books out myself.
All right. And so now do you make a special point of do you have Halloween parties or big extravaganzas? Do you have certain things that you do every year with your friends?
Craig and I always look to do something. First of all, every Halloween season, he tries to scare me.
Okay.
And it's just, he knows I sort of get a kick out of it. And sometimes, you know, the first couple of times, my not work, but he usually gets me at least one good jump. And we look for things to do, and that might be different from year to year. One year we, you know, went to different, you know, Halloween haunted trails and things like that. One year we had attended a murder mystery dinner where we got dressed up in tuxedos and everything. One year we were at the beach in Pawleys Island, and there was some supposedly haunted cemetery there that we went to in the middle of the night and just wandered around trying to find the grave that was supposed to be haunted, but we never found it. And so, you know, every year we look for stuff to do like that. And, you know, it might be going to see a, you know, there was a play this past year of Frankenstein locally and things like that. So every year it might be a little something different, but we do always look for something to do that time of year.
Now, where can people find more about you? Or do you have a website? Or I know you're on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I have an author page on Amazon, Mark Allen Gunnels, has all my works. I do have a blog that is updated semi-regularly, and it's markgunnels.livejournal.com. And it's me talking about writing and my books, but also other writers I like, and I like to have other writers on to do guest blogs there. And I have a Twitter, at Mark A. Gunnels. Twitter is something I'm still trying to figure out.
Okay.
But I'm much more, you know, active on Facebook. But those are primarily the places, Facebook, my Amazon author page, and my blog.
Okay. And, the Live Journal is a great website blog, too. I've been reading that a lot lately. I want to read something when Crystal Lake Publishing, and I always go back to them because I just love Joe so much and all the people there and Jasper and all the folks. But they say when, and the page he has for the book on crystallakepub.com, he said, "The world is full of beauty and mystery. In these 17 tales, Gunnels takes you on a journey through landscapes of light and darkness, rapture and agony, hope and fear, and a post-apocalyptic landscape where it's safer to forget who you once were, an unusual support group comprised of cities dying of a common illness, a porn star who's opened himself up to demonic forces, a woman whose masochistic tendencies may be her boyfriend's ruin, and a writer whose new friendship proves a danger to his marriage and sanity. Let Gunnels guide you through these landscapes where magnificence and decay coexist side by side. Come pick a bouquet from these flowers in a dumpster." So well said. That's just so beautifully written. With magnificence and decay just coexist side by side. That's so beautiful. What kind of response do you get from fans and readers? Do you hear from a lot of people?
I do. I mean, probably the most attention I've gotten since I've been publishing, I published my first book in 2009. Probably the most attention I've gotten has been in this last year with the book from Crystal Lake and then the two books that came out from Sinister Grin. I mean, on the Fangoria website, they had a top 13 horrifying reads for the year, and my Crystal Lake collection, Flowers in a Dumpster, and Fort from Sinister Grin Press were both on that list. And so it's very exciting.
Fangoria, that's pretty high mark there.
Yeah, I was really impressed. Yeah. And then my new collection with Sinister Grin, Companions in Ruin, is getting, you know, nice reviews. And I do hear from people, and it's kind of nice because, you know, especially with the collection, a reader might not like everything, but, you know, some of the stories that some readers are saying they think are the weakest or the stories that other people think are the strongest. So it's getting a nice, you know, kind of eclectic mix of reviews, but people are saying very nice things, and I'm very happy with what I'm hearing from people, because ultimately I just want to entertain people, and I feel like from what I'm hearing that I'm doing it.
Well, tell me about Companions in Ruin.
That is a collection I put together with Sinister Grin. I try to take a slightly different approach. Usually when I am putting together a collection. I'm looking for a lot of, I'm putting in a lot of stories that haven't been previously published, just because I feel like, well, the stories that have appeared in magazines and anthologies are already out there. I want to get some of these that no one has seen yet out there. But I was thinking a lot of these stories that I've previously published have been very small magazines or e-zines or some obscure anthologies. So maybe it will be nice to get them all in one place, and maybe people who have never read them can discover them. So there are some previously unpublished stories in there, but I was really going for collecting a lot of my stories from that had been published in magazines and e-zines before. And I had a lot of fun putting it together. I love that process of, like, picking which stories and watching the collection sort of take on its personality.
Oh, yeah.
And I definitely try for, like, an sort of an eclectic mix, like different themes, different tones, different lengths, and things like that, so people can see sort of a range when they read it.
I like that. If you're listening to us live tonight on Tuesday, March 22nd, I'm talking to Mark Allen Gunnels, and you can call in and ask him a question or talk to him at 646-716-9922. I'll be happy to hear from you. Or if you want to, just listen down below here. There's a place where you can leave comments and or comments or questions. And usually when my guests are asked questions, they'll respond to them. And you can choose whether or not you want your comment to just be here or also on Facebook. Another book I want to ask you about, Mark, is Summer of Winters.
Yes.
About it.
That book came out a few years back with Evil Jester Press, and it's my sort of coming-of-age novel. I do love that subgenre, the coming-of-age sort of thing, like Robert McCammon's Boy's Life, Joe Lansdale's The Bottoms. So I kind of always had wanted to write one, but I didn't just want to write one to be writing one. I definitely wanted a solid idea. I just knew that I wanted to write something that took place in the 80s in my hometown that could explore my childhood while telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit on this idea one day about a young girl that was, you know, assaulted and murdered, and a young boy who thinks he knows who did it and is trying to figure out what to do, who he can tell. But does he want to tell since he's not sure? He doesn't want to, you know, get someone in trouble who didn't do it. So it's sort of the summer in this boy's life where he's trying to deal with these very adult problems. And like I said, I did set it in my hometown in the 80s. I threw in a lot of my childhood there, a lot of my memories and of what my hometown was like when I was a kid, which is very different than what it is now. And I had so much fun writing it. You know, it got pretty good reviews back then. I would love for people to rediscover it. That's the great thing about the internet now. It's like a book's life can really go on, and you can still be hearing about a book long after it's,
that's,
you know,
true,
come
and
out.
That's what I tell. Yeah, and you know, I'm an entertainment publicist, and I always tell my clients, especially authors, you know, you've got this gift. You know, it might seem like an aggravation to you sometimes, but you can use it to do so very much to keep your work and alive and in front of people. All right, well, we're almost out of time, and I like how you said the robotic British voice is telling us that we've only got less than a minute left. So, folks, I'm thrilled to have Mark Gunnels as a guest. Mark Allen Gunnels, get his books, get Flowers in the Dumpster, get The Summer of Winters, go learn everything you can. I've got stuff here, links down here below where you can find them. Also, if you saw the post on Facebook, and also be adding it to Google Plus this week, as well as Twitter for Lone Wolf Jen. Mark, any parting comments to the audience?
I hope people enjoy the stories. And if you do enjoy it, take a minute to leave a short review on Amazon. Those things really do help writers at my level. And the more reviews you get, the more attention a book gets. So just take a minute, leave me a review. I'll love you forever for it.
I can't say better than that. This is Madam Perry Salon with Mark Allen Gunnels signing off.
feel clear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Alrighty. Well, tell he's a southern boy. Then you could tell he's a southern boy.
Yeah. Yeah, he said he was from South Carolina.